champion who ruled by intimidation.
Me, if you can survive, if I let you.
Taz would pick up guys nearly twice his size and drop them on their heads.
He is a human suplex machine.
Now he's bringing his no-nonsense New York swagger to the podcast world. This is Taz.
The mood is about to change.
The Human Podcast Machine.
You're not afraid of a little competition, are you?
All right, what's going on, boys and girls? How's everyone doing? This is he, the Human Podcast Machine. My name is Taz, and thank you for downloading this edition of HPM. Thanks for all your support. HPM is doing great. Cannot be happier with the folks at Play.it and CBS Radio. So thank you for your support and downloading and subscribing to my show, which is... This episode is going to be pretty fun, man. I mean, you guys been, a lot of you guys, these old school ECW fans, you've been looking for this. You've been wanting to hear Sabu and Taz converse publicly. We have not talked in a long time. And this interview, you know, Sabu's very candid, very blunt about a lot of stuff. I'm going to be honest with you. I'll be real with you. The interview starts out a little slow. You know, I mean, Sabu's not big into talking publicly. I had to pull something out of him. I really did. I ain't gonna lie. I'm not putting myself over. But, you know, I mean, I had to get him to warm up a little bit, and he did. And then we started rock and rolling, and he became Sabu. So be patient. The interview starts out slow, but I think it escalates and gets really good. And you get some detail about what Sabu's doing in the future. But you're also going to hear some of his candid thoughts about the Sandman and Paul Heyman. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, it's a pretty cool interview. Honestly, I hope you guys dig it. I really do. And also, the Taz tale in this episode is a funny one, guys. I'm just telling you right now, this one's pretty funny. So I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to like this. Just there are certain words you can and cannot say in the WWE, and I wasn't aware of that. I don't want to spoil it for you. Just give it a listen, man. This Taz tale is good. Tell your friends and family. And that to listen to, if you're not an ECW fan and you don't care about me and Sabu, that's cool. But you got to listen to the Taz Tale. I'm just telling you, it's funny. So that's really the deal on that. So we'll be right back here in a few seconds with the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal Sabu coming at you next.
The Human Podcast Machine.
Break time.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, everybody, here we go. You wanted the man, you wanted the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal Sabu, and you wanted me, Taz, to talk to him. As promised, the man himself is here. Sabu, what's up, man?
How are you, Taz?
Good, buddy. We have not talked in a very long time. This is it's kind of weird, I gotta be honest.
Right on.
Yeah. Well, now, is it weird for you?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because for me, it's, you know, when I started doing this podcast, I'm like, well, what, you know, who do people want to hear me talk to for the most part? A lot of people said Shane Douglas, and of course, a bunch of people said you. And I, you know, there's always been this rivalry between us, right? All your success you've had in your career, all the championships you've held. I've said this myself publicly many times. If it wasn't for you, I never would have became what I became. You know, my role when ECW started, when Todd Gordon was running it, as you know, when it was Eastern Championship Wrestling, was to come in and just put you over. Paul Heyman called me and goes, you know, Sabu? I go, I think I was on some indie show in Minneapolis with him a while back or whatever I said. And I said, yeah, I the guy's great. He goes, yeah, well, I need you to put him over in 20 minutes. I go, what other dates can you give me? That's it. I got nothing else. You know? So my job was to come in and put you over, you know? But what I've said, when I had Van Damme here on my podcast, I owe you a lot because in that match, I remember that match when you came out on the gurney and all that, and we'll get into that in a minute because I know you love the gurney.
Yeah, I loved it.
So I remember going over that match. I thought you were going to be kind of a douche where you didn't want me to do anything and you were going to just guzzle me, you know, because I had no name. I was nobody, you know. And you were so generous and you know, you helped make me. And that match got me a bunch of bookings and led to, you know, a career in ECW. So I want to publicly say thank you for that.
Well, I didn't quite know that, but thank you.
You know, why do you think it is that people still think we hate each other?
Because they think wrestling's a competition, and they don't realize it's a popularity contest.
Okay. So you think that people get off on the fact, knowing if two guys have heat with each other, or they were wrestling each other all the time, and they hear stories about, these guys hated each other. So you think a lot of that, it's just bullshit for the most part.
Yeah, I think they want to see us not like each other so that we hurt each other when we do see each other.
Well, that's a good point. I never heard that point of view. You know, truth be told, I mean, I can't speak for you towards respect towards me, but I think you know the respect I have towards you. You know, and you and I were, you know, we were in the same position before Barely Legal, the first ever ECW pay-per-view. Because the gun was to our heads. For both of us, we were pushed. This angle was pushed where we didn't touch each other until, you know, Philadelphia and Barely Legal. So there was all this hype about you and I. I was the heel, you were the face, all this stuff. I'm calling you out. You're not coming. And then the pressure was on us to perform at Barely Legal. I mean, do you feel like we did our job as far as delivering in that main event?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I enjoyed that, man. I thought it was cool. I thought it was, you know, very physical and very good.
I don't think we've ever had a match that wasn't physical, bro.
Well, that's true, yeah. Actually, that first one, I remember, man, I had a fucked up ankle and you whacked me in the face and I'm holding my ankle and my face.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was cool.
I remember that. No, bro, you were, I don't know how to explain, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. You were the easiest guy to work with. I can't speak for other wrestlers, like how they like or dislike working with Sabu. You were the easiest guy to work with. And I had to keep up this facade that I hated your guts. I never hated your guts. You know, we were competitive behind the scenes. You know, at times I thought, you know, early on, I publicly apologized in the episode with Van Damme I had, where I felt like during the ECW years, I was a little immature. I didn't handle my push right. Like you, it took me a long time to get a push. And we kind of got our push a long at the same time. But you were much more mature about how you handled my push. I was a little immature. So I want to say to you, too, like I said to Rob, I do apologize for that.
You don't have to apologize for that. We all learned.
Well, thanks, man. And, you know, I've felt like we just, you know, we clicked, man. And it was just easy to work with you. And you were, there was not a spot that you would not do. You were, I've always said, one of the, probably the top three toughest son of a bitches I've ever wrestled was you. No, because toughness, and I said this to Rob too, you know, toughness is not measured by can you beat a guy up. That's not about toughness.
Right.
Toughness is about what you can, you know, take, you know. And, dude, I've done things to you in a ring, and it's like, this guy won't die, you know. And I always knew what you had in your boots. So I had to be careful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I miss you. I miss wrestling you. I do. I mean, I don't miss wrestling. I'm glad I'm out of the ring, but I miss wrestling you, because it was always fun. It was always competitive. I felt like I always felt like I had to prove myself. I had to try to be better than Sabu. Paul Heyman was the teacher. Everyone was trying to impress the teacher, and you were like, I felt like you were his prize student. You know what I mean? Sabu can't do anything wrong, you know? And that used to drive me crazy. And Paul, being a manipulator, would utilize that against me, as you know.
Of course.
So, I mean, and then we had those matches where we just would have, we'd go all over the place, do the loop, and it was just like 30-minute Broadways. And we just, you remember those things, bro?
Yeah, of course. That's what started ECW. People think it was like, you know, the reputation of Tommy Dreamer and all that, which is fine, but it really wasn't. It was me and you. It wasn't even Sandman. Sandman was an extra when we were there.
Yeah.
He was wearing he was doing a surfer type gimmick, if you remember back then,
yeah,
right?
It was a bit ridiculous if you look at him now and then, because he acts like he's a big shot that he started out this way. He didn't. He started out as a schmuck with paint on his nose.
I love you.
Because he acts like a big shot, like you know how he had this plan. That wasn't a plan. Sandman was a fucking a total accident.
Well, that's true. And, you know, he's went public, you know, and he's bashed me. Oh, Taz is not tough. Taz wasn't a shooter. And I'd never said anything negative about him. We were a team, and we all had our strengths and weaknesses. I'm not going to go bury him. I feel like when people go and do like that, you know, and they act like they were the reason why ECW succeeded, you know, I think that's insecurities, you know what I mean? And I've never heard you go out and say, I'm the reason why ECW succeeded. I cut my body in half. I busted my body in half. And I went through a million tables. I was the first table guy. I did this. I did this. I'd never heard you say that.
Because I don't really feel that way. I thought it was a team effort, you know.
That's
and,
right.
And a lot of the pieces fell into place. We didn't have a plan for them.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And like, I think that Paul was great at that. He was great, as you know, at positioning guys. He would hide our weaknesses and push our strengths. You know, he was very good at that. And
of course, and I respected him for that and applaud him for it, but I don't applaud him or respect him for everything, that's for sure.
Right. Well, yes. We've all had love-hate relationships with Paul over the years. You had more of a hate-hate relationship with him. I remember, dude. I mean, you know, you were – I've seen you, bro, get stiff with him behind the scenes back in the – I remember.
Hey, man, you know, too, that motherfucker didn't back down either.
No, never, Paul. No way. No. He would. He used to get mad at people. Don't realize he would sit in a room with you and I and get so pissed at us for stuff, and we would yell and curse. If we did that with anybody else, we'd have been fired on the spot. But I remember the time when you know where I'm going to go with this. When you went to Japan, and I think we were the ECW Tag Champs, or we were baby faces trying to become champs, whatever we were doing, and you went to Japan. And I stayed back, and that kind of was like the seed that kind of motivated me, because I was truly mad that instead of making the ECW shot, you made the Japan shot, you know what I mean? And again, being immature, I was bitter and pissed about it, and I felt like you weren't being loyal to ECW and all that stuff, and I felt like you weren't being loyal to me as a teammate, you know? And I mean, I'm sure you heard during that time that I was pissed, right?
Of course. Are you kidding?
Who told you? Was it Paul? Or was like so, who, Dream? Who told you?
Who told me? I seen the promo.
But maybe I was working in a promo. I guess I...
That wasn't a word.
Dude, all those times that I Paul had me call you out, curse you out. And do the point. I'm doing a point to the heavens. Doing a point. At that hot, it had to make you hot that you weren't coming out. I mean, now being older and having more wisdom, I'm like, God, Sabu, the big baby face, huge baby face, spirit fighting baby face, that had to piss this guy off that he wasn't allowed to come out and whoop my ass. Did it really piss you off, or you knew it was just good for business?
It was eating me up, but I knew it was good for business.
Right.
Because when you would be out in the ring cutting a promo on me, everybody in the dressing room would look at the monitor, and I go, what? It's a work, you know?
It is a work.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't thank you enough for all the years and just getting after it, you and I, if I had a new suplex that I wanted to try, I'd talk to you, hey, bro, I want to try this. Yeah, no problem. How do you want to do it? You were always, you would help me. Like, you would, you know, really, I mean, we were competitive with each other, but I know I've always respected you. I remember, like, when I had Van Damme on this podcast recently, he goes, it was very funny, you know how Rob could have that dry sense of humor. He goes, Taz, I think, and I'm paraphrasing, but he goes, I think that Sabu secretly loved you back in the day. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, he would always talk about you on the way to the building, on the way home from the building, in the gym. So I popped when he said that. How do you not laugh? It's funny. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think it was cool of you to come on here, you know, with me. I mean, you didn't have to do this. I know you don't talk much publicly. You never have. And do you feel like that's something that you regret, that you weren't a big talker. You made, you know, I know you, back in the day, that's what you wanted. You wanted to just go out and compete and be athletic and physical. You didn't give a shit about talking. Do you regret not being more of a talker, or just, what's your thoughts on that?
Okay. No, I don't regret. Because when I was about 8 or 9 years old, me and my mom was watching Georgia Championship Wrestling. And we didn't like wrestling, that kind of wrestling, but we watched it anyways. Really, I only cared about my uncle at the time, the Sheik. But anyways, we were watching it, and Ric Flair's on there cutting a promo. And then Tommy Rich cut a promo, and then someone else cut a promo. And they were pretty much the same thing, but different color hair. So my mom looked at me and goes, promise me you'll never do that. And I go, I'll never talk. I'll never say a word. And then so that kind of, I stuck to that.
I never knew that. I never knew that.
Yeah, it was a promise to my mom. Plus, I'm shy, and my strong point isn't talking, and never was, and I never bragged about it. So it's hard for me to fake it, you know, because if I can't believe myself, I know the person I'm talking to ain't gonna believe me.
Well, no, and you're shy on camera or with a mic in your face, but behind the scenes, when your guard is down, for lack of better terms, you're actually a funny son of a bitch. I mean, you're very entertaining. It's like Dean Malenko. Dean Malenko's another guy, like, on camera. You know how Dean is, like, on camera. He wasn't really a good talker, but behind the scenes, the guy's hilarious. You know what I mean?
Behind the scenes, he's a pain in the ass.
Well, yes, but he's he is a pain in the ass, but he's entertaining of a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? And you're speaking of Sheik, like, I know the influence that Sheik had on you. You know, like, talk a little bit about your uncle and all of your memories of him and like you and Van Damme coming up. Van Damme talked a little bit about how you helped break him in, and you pushed him around. He called you like in the dojo, you were like a long-haired hippie. He called you like a hippie, right? It's pretty funny. I'm stooging him off. Van Damme called you a hippie, bro. So,
but no, he's a hippie.
He is a hippie. No, but anyway, he was talking about how you were tough on him. Rob was saying that you were, like, you know, messing with him, like trying to, you know, get physical with him because that's what Sheik wanted, to test him. But talk about, like, the influence that not only was Sheik blood to you, your uncle, but as a mentor and a sensei to you. Talk a little bit about Sheik and what you miss about him.
Well, you know, it's hard to explain. He wasn't like a regular coach, but he was the best. You know, I don't know how to explain it really. He wasn't a regular coach. He was like a drill sergeant, father, coach, you know, mentor thing.
Yeah.
So whatever he told me early on, like, even if he was wrong, I still had to follow his order. Even if I know what he's telling me is 100% wrong and I know better, but he told me to do it, I still had to do it, you know. And he tested me like that, and I did it. Only once I didn't do it, you know.
He must have got hot.
Yeah, and like, when he taught me things or explained things to me, he only had to do it once. I don't know why. I'm not a very smart guy, but when he talked, I absorbed it. You know,
well, you respected him, and you trusted him, right? And you respected him.
Yeah, 100%. And whatever he said, you know, I trusted him, like you said. You know, I knew he was not going to steer me wrong. Even if he was wrong, he wasn't trying to steer me wrong.
Correct. Yeah, because sometimes, and I know what you mean, like those old school guys, you couldn't figure them out. You didn't know what the end of the road was that they were talking about, but you knew that they were trying to get you on that track. You know what I mean?
Right. And he didn't waste lessons or his breath on me. Like, he'd laugh and joke sometimes, but if that laugh and that joke was a lesson, you know.
And I don't think people realize, I mean, you know, all the success that Sheik had as a wrestler. I mean, his success for younger fans. I mean, this guy was just a stud. I mean, blockbuster drawing wrestler, you know? I mean, do you remember some of those big, massive sold-out matches like Abdullah the Butcher? Do you remember that stuff?
Well, when I was younger, see, we lived in Lansing, so we didn't go to Detroit to Cobo Hall. I only went there once or twice.
Oh. And
you know, so we got the smaller shows in Lansing, but to me, those were huge. But when I got older, then I realized about Cobo Hall. I didn't even know about Cobo Hall for a year, you know, 15 years almost.
Yeah, you were a kid. Yeah, sure. Yeah, man, he I remember, I don't, you know, through you, only met Sheik, like, I think maybe once or twice. And one night, I don't know if you remember this, was the ECW Arena. We're doing a TV taping, and it was me and Kevin Sullivan against you and Sheik. And he was gonna throw fire at me, right? So Kevin, Sheik and Kevin were brawling around the building. You and I were doing high spots and bumping, shocking, right? And Kevin and Sheik are doing their thing outside. And I don't remember the exact spot, but I'm saying, I knew that Sheik had to get like on the by the ringside area, and I was going to sell back towards the ropes, and he was going to throw fire and burn my back, and that was going to lead to the finish, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember this match?
Yes, the only thing was, it wasn't me. It was Pat Tanaka and the Sheik versus you and Kevin Sullivan.
Now, look at this shit. All the shots to the head that you've taken more than me, you remember that?
Yes, because someone brought it to my attention the other day, how Sheik threw fire like 6 feet away from you.
Dude,
and
6 feet. The friggin' fire. He was like in the third row. And I don't know how he reached me. I remember before the match, I was putting a lot of baby oil on and stuff. And you came over to me and said, bro, don't put that on. He's going to throw the fire. I never got hit with fire. You smarted me up. You don't put the oil on. And then he, jeez, I'm embarrassed. It was a long time ago. I didn't know it was Pat Tanaka.
It was Pat Tanaka. It was such an odd couple, Sheik and Pat Tanaka. It was funny.
Yeah, thank you for correcting me. So, but that was the story. He threw the friggin' fire from, it wasn't 6 feet, bro. It had to be 12, 13 feet. I don't know how the hell he reached me, and it was hot. Shoot hot, you know? But yeah, it was Pat Tanaka. Wow.
Yeah, that was funny.
Dude, how do you remember that stuff?
Like I said, someone reminded me the other day, and I just knew it was, I remember it.
Otherwise, you wouldn't remember it.
Yeah, I would have remembered it anyway, but someone brought it to my attention. It's funny you bring that up.
Oh, that is funny. Yeah, that's just something I remember about Sheik, man. It was crazy. I mean, do you watch stuff now? Do you watch WWE much or TNA or Ring of Honor? Do you watch the stuff much or not too much?
No and yes. You know, if it's on, yeah, I'll watch it, but I won't look for it.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of, like, younger guys, I hear younger wrestlers, like, say, you know, how much of a trailblazer you were and set the table for a lot of guys, current wrestlers, you know. I know you still get after it, you still get out there, you're still in great shape, and you're still working on some indies here and there, but and tours. But some of these guys, man, you definitely kind of, you know, you set the table for these guys, and I don't think enough people give you enough credit for that. And, I'm sure that whenever you walk in a locker room to this day, you better be getting mad respect from some of these young guys.
Yeah, I do. You know, I think some of them don't know who I am, and that's fine. I don't care. When I introduce myself, I say, nice to meet you. I never say my name. I always say, damn, I should have said my name.
Yeah. But what's with the hair? You shaved your head bald, which I was very depressed when I heard that. I saw a picture you were bald, and I that got me angry. Your whole gimmick was the hair. Well, not your whole gimmick, but you know what I mean. And then you shaved your head. Now you grew your hair back. What's with the hair?
Well, a couple of years ago, I noticed that my hair was getting thin, and so I wanted to shave my head before people knew I was going bald, so they wouldn't think I was getting bald.
So there was no big secret. You're just trying to be ahead of the curve. I got you.
Yeah, I was trying to get ahead of it, but then my bookies dropped off, and you know, people change. It's like, I go, it's only my fucking hair. They go, but it's your gimmick. I go, well, you know, my hair never took many bumps, but my body did, so I still got that, you know.
Yeah. You know, I ask people on a Twitter account, like, you know, hey, what kind of questions? I don't normally ask people who follow me on Twitter what kind of questions they want me to ask guests, but it's just such a unique, kind of a strange thing to talk with you in a public forum. You know, when you and I have done things, it was always a physical thing, a wrestling match, you know. And so I wanted to see what people really want to hear me ask Sabu. And a lot of it was, you know, just stuff about your career. But, you know, somebody asked, like, hey, did Sabu watch your promos, Taz promos on him while he was in WCW? And if so, did it infuriate him? I think you covered that. But your WCW deal, you were probably just busy with that, right?
No, I paid attention to that because I knew it was temporary. I was just being an asshole until I came, you know, things moved over and I come back.
Oh, so okay, all right. See, I didn't realize that.
Paul knew that, but he made it so difficult for me. He knew that. He had me cut my throat all over the fucking world. He did. You know that.
I didn't know that, dude. I didn't know that.
Yeah, every company, FMW, who gave him the first big break, they end up hating me in the long run because of him.
Wow. Dude, speaking of Japan,
yeah,
I remember when we went.
Well, hold on. You spoke earlier about I chose Japan over ECW. Japan's giving me six. They gave me $6,000 opposed to $700. That wasn't that hard for me to do. I wasn't rich. You know that.
I know, but I wish I would have got that payday back then. I would have went with you to Japan.
Oh, I know. If I could have got it for you, I would have.
No, I know. I'm joking. I'm teasing. I didn't realize it was that big of a money difference that he was giving you compared to what they gave you.
Yeah, but they increased it $1,000. I was making $2,000 because I was making $4,000 a week as a top junior. They said, you know, that was top pay.
Yeah.
I said, cool. And then one day I was trying to test the waters, and they wanted me to put over Chris Benoit, and I go no. And they go, okay. And I go, you know, I was half joking, but I'll go with it. They said, no, it's no. So I beat them. And they go, but you got to come back April 8th. I said, yeah, no problem. And then found out I had another match April 8th in ECW. So I just chose the one I was making more money at, like most people would have. You know, I wasn't disloyal. It was just, you know, I wanted the money. What can I say? Greed, I guess.
So I always thought it was, well, you were double booked, right? You knew that, well, yeah, that's where, and, you know, I mean, I guess... You know, my fire was lit a little bit by others in that locker room, maybe Paul, and that April 8th, that you kind of knew you were booked on the 8th, and you went to greener pastures, and that's where I kind of got hot. And
well,
you know,
I didn't really go to greener pastures. I just thought I could get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember at the time, you didn't know why some people were hot about it. I remember you saying that. I remember talking about you about that in the locker room, year, you know, not maybe a year or so after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a long time ago, right? Whatever. I mean, it was just crazy. But I didn't. So you felt like Paul kind of was having you burn bridges elsewhere. So you basically stayed there. Is that kind of? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know how he had his motherfucker Vince and all this stuff, and now he's fucking Vince's right hand man.
How do you really feel, bro?
you know, shit. He had everybody motherfucker Vince, even me when I had that tryout. He talked me out of that fucking tryout when I think it was 94 or something or
94. Yeah.
He talked me out of it and he kept following through with no promises other than a push, but I couldn't eat that push. Everybody right. thought I would do that. I wasn't making that much money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very interesting to see Paul's position with WWE the past couple of years for sure, and he's become like one of their top characters on their show. It's crazy, man. I never thought in a million years that would happen. You know, we all know he can cut a great promo and all that, and he's an interesting character, and he's, you know, but I got to say, I never thought, you know, I guess we were just drinking the Kool-Aid, dude, and we, you know, I guess that's what happened.
He's right where he wanted to be ever since he was 14 years old.
I think people will appreciate you being candid, being honest, and your true feelings. I mean, you've never pulled punches. I know that about you. And you know, I know you're not, like we said earlier, you're not big into talking publicly, but, you know, look, I understand Paul's got a family, he's got kids, he's, you know, it's a long time ago, and he's just trying to pay his bills. I guess some would say that. You know what I mean? Like, but I remember, I mean, I was cutting promos on TV about the WWE and Vince and all that stuff and WCW and burying everybody here. Yeah, he had me doing that, you know?
And then later on, we got to work with these guys, and he's working with them.
Yeah, and getting a better push than we did.
Of course.
Who's the marks? Who's the marks here? Wow. You just depressed me. So what do you got going on, man? I know you got some stuff in the fire. Let's talk about the current, the future. What's going on with Sabu?
Well, this weekend I'm in Rahway, New Jersey. Or no, well, that don't matter. What really is going on, I'm starting up a school and a small company here in Lansing, Michigan. It's going to be awesome. I got a building and a arena and everything. Probably going to start it up in March, hopefully.
That's awesome. Congrats on that. So it's basically a building where you have an area big enough for a ring. You have like locker rooms. You have do some taping stuff? What are you doing in there?
We got a smaller building what holds the ring and about a lot more than just the ring. And then we got a building right next door, an arena what holds about 500 people with television equipment, music equipment, music production studio, television studio. You know, everything we need under one roof. For you know, almost nothing.
Whoa, that's awesome, dude. That sounds like it's gonna be pretty cool. So you're gonna be basically training guys, breaking guys in. I'm sure you're gonna get somebody to help you out with that too, because it's tough. I'm telling you from experience, and you know, you've trained guys. It's tough to do alone. You know, you're gonna get someone to help you.
And it's a pain in the ass. Yeah, I definitely got somebody to help me.
Good. And well, to have a facility that can be an arena, have a dojo, have TV equipment and a studio right there on the property. Bro, that's huge. As long as you're not getting killed on the rent, I hope not.
The arena doesn't look like a studio. It's not a studio. It's in a small arena, but it looks huge when you turn the lights down. It looks huge.
Wow. It sounds like it's going to be cool, man. And you got some people behind you helping you with that. I mean, I guess there's probably some money folks involved, I'm sure.
Yeah, but, you know, we got some silent partners, and I got my not so silent partners, Tom Rude and Yusuf Diaz.
Well, good, man. Well, good, bro. That sounds like it's awesome. I mean, maybe once it gets rolling a little bit, if you want to come out and come back on here, we'll talk about that a little bit. It might be kind of cool.
Of course, anytime.
Good, man. Well, good luck with that. And bro, it's been great just catching up with you, man. I mean, I love your honesty. I love your bluntness. I miss seeing you. We had a lot of laughs. We had a lot of tension. We had a lot of laughs. But it was always, at the end of the day, we always ended with laughs, you know. And it was, I can't thank you enough for the opportunities you've given me as a fellow wrestler. And I mean that, bro. You know I'm not a bullshit artist, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. And I love you, man, and I miss you.
Just for the record, I love you too, Taz, but just for the record, I forgive you.
What did I do now?
You went for all the car crashes and stuff.
Oh, let me smart people up with the car crashes. That was the half Nelson back suplex, Sabu Dean. The car crash. Explain why it was the car crash, bro.
Right, because it felt like a car crash after I landed. but it was a half Nelson suplex from the second row.
Yeah, and then the table, and then, dude, that was all your idea, all that shit.
Yeah, but I still forgive you.
Well, I forgive you for smashing my face on every moonsault. I forgive you for you standing on the top turnbuckle while I'm laid across a guardrail on a friggin' table, and you just drive your elbow into my face and sternum. I forgive you, bro.
What was I supposed to do?
You're killing me. Oh, bro, I swear to God, I miss you, man. It was great having you on here. Hopefully fans that listen to this, I had a good time listening to it.
Right on, man. Me too. I had a good time.
All right, brother. Look, let's talk again. Let's stay in touch, all right?
You got it, man. Thanks.
Good luck. See you, bro.
All right, later.
Hey, the Human Podcast Machine will be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Boys and girls, pull up your stools. It is now time for Taz Tales.
All right, so it's pretty obvious for those of you that have followed my career as the Human Suplex Machine, an in-ring wrestler, into a broadcaster, and now into a podcast/radio personality, for lack of better terms. For those that know me and have paid attention to my career and my vernacular, as they say, I am not a wordsmith. I am not a grammar master. I am not the sensei of the English language. I'm a guy from the inner city of New York that's got horrible slang. And, speak like you're hearing right now. I am who I am. I don't bullshit around that. This is the way I talk. This is the way I am. Nothing fancy, no work, no fake. This is me. Now, to me, it's always been a small miracle that a cat like me can make a living with my voice. But I've had opportunity, which started with the WWE, with Vince McMahon, give me that opportunity because I had a certain niche, or niche in the French vernacular, niche. And I guess that's kind of like my thing, similar to good old JR, you know, Jim Ross, from a different, you know, a whole different deal, a southern drawl. You know, he too is not a, you know, his southern drawl, like my New York accent, can sometimes butcher the English language, for lack of better terms, right? So, but here's the deal, though. I've done pretty well as a broadcaster and an on-air audio personality, as Jim Ross has, too. Which brings me to this Taz tale, which is very interesting. While I was in the WWE, and I was the color commentator on SmackDown with Michael Cole, was the play-by-play guy, Jim Ross, good old JR, was the play-by-play guy on Raw, and I believe at that time, I'm sure it was Jerry Lawler. Jerry the King Lawler was his color commentator. Now, at that time, it was during the WWE, it was real hot time, like good ratings, the houses were up, business was up. Both SmackDown and Raw, two separate basic rosters for the most part, and both were doing really well. I mean, everywhere. The boys were making money. The company was making money, the gates were up, the shows were great, the ratings for SmackDown and Raw were both up
Now, you notice I always say SmackDown first because that was something me and Michael Cole used to say to each other. We got to start wording things SmackDown first when we were a team on that show. So we have a bigger presence. It was always, oh, we're on SmackDown. We're on SmackDown. So we kind of, so it's still like, I guess, ingrained in me, you know, SmackDown first. But I digress. So what happened was during this era of a hot time in WWE, I want to say it was, I'm bad with years, guys. Those of you that are fans of HPM right here, the Human Podcast Machine show, know that I'm not good with timelines and years and stuff, details. Not my strong suit in that regard. But it was probably, you know, mid-2000s, let's just say hypothetically 2005-ish. You got to throw an ish in there. If you throw an ish in, you're good. So you just put an ish. And you cover yourself. It's a big qualifier. 2005-ish. So here I am in this production meeting. Where were we? I think we were in Milwaukee. And it was a SmackDown. It was a Tuesday. So we're in a production meeting. And all the writers are at the head table. Well, not all the writers. Two of the writers. I think at that time it was Brian Gewurz and Ed Koski were the two writers at the head table, along with Kevin Dunn, Vince McMahon, of course, and I believe Stephanie McMahon was sitting at the head table. And in the crowd, in the audience, for lack of better terms, was the announcers, all the agents, and Triple H was there, who was not an agent at the, you know, well, not really an agent, but he was Triple H, and I think that might have been it. So, and the director, a gentleman by the name of Kerwin Silfies, he was sitting there also. So, at one point, total random, they're going over a segment, and I'm just sitting there next to Michael Cole, just taking notes, we're taking notes just to get an overview of the show. When they would go over the finish of each match, we would leave. Okay, so our call wasn't contrived. We never really wanted to know the finish of the match. We wanted that to be organic and natural, and Vince McMahon wanted that to be organic and natural, and I still try to handle calling matches that way. So it could be organic. Anyway, we're sitting there, and they're going over a match. I don't remember what match it was, and Vince McMahon makes eye contact with me. And by the way, Jim Ross was in this meeting too. He was sitting in, and he called Raw the night before, but he was sitting in the audience. He would usually come to Raw and SmackDown. And if Michael Cole and I needed any assistance with anything, like, you know, like some deep direction on any storylines or from an announcer standpoint, he would help us, you know, as the senior lead announcer. So at one point, Vince McMahon made eye contact with me. I was sitting on the aisle. There was a bunch of these tables. They were at the head table facing us, like a dais, for lack of better terms. And I'm sitting on the aisle of this table, and he makes eye contact with me, and he goes, ah. And he looks at me and just shakes his head like, no. So everybody's looking around, they're looking at me. Like, what? I'm thinking, what did I do? I don't. He goes, geez, Taz, we got to talk. I go, so I giggled like that. I go, all right. I go, what's up? You want to talk now or you want to talk later? He goes, ah, no, we'll talk later. I go, okay. And everybody kind of snickers, right? He goes, yeah, we'll just talk later. He goes, we got to do something. He goes, if I hear the word, this is Vince McMahon, I'm quasi-quoting him. If I hear the word ain't, A-I-N-T, if I hear the word ain't one more time, I swear my head's going to explode. And I go, Vince, I'm sitting, I didn't say anything. He goes, no, I know you didn't say anything now. He goes, but I watched the show back last week, SmackDown, and you said ain't twice in a two-hour show. And I said, okay. He goes, no, that's not a word. He goes, that's not a word, Taz. That is not a word. Ain't is not a word. You can't say ain't. That's not a word. That's New York slang. It's not a word. It's not in the dictionary. To this day, by the way, I haven't looked up the word ain't. So I'm sure you guys let me know if it's a word or not. And I said, I got you. Okay, so what do you want to do? He goes, well, tell you the truth. He goes, I can't hear that anymore, Taz, in the show. I can't hear it. You can't say ain't. You cannot say ain't anymore. I go, okay, I won't say ain't. He goes, but can you? Can you not say ain't? I go, yes. if I tell you, now we're having this discussion for everybody in this production meeting. I go, if I tell you, actually, I'm sorry, it was an agent meeting. Not a big difference, but it was an agent meeting. And I said, if I tell you that I'm not going to say the word, now we're arguing, by the way, him and I, Vince and I, because he would love that. He would, if you came back at him, he would love that. As long as you defended yourself, he was in. He was, he loved a fight. And I love a fight. So I'll argue with you all day. So I said, if I tell you I'm not going to say ain't, I won't say ain't. I was, okay, fine. He goes, let's do this. Every time you say ain't in a show, every single time you say ain't, you get fined $100. So everybody laughs. Everybody pops in the room, right? So I laugh too. I go, you serious? Because I'm dead serious. Because we're making a competition. I go, okay, so what do I get if I don't say ain't? And, you know, if you're going to get $100 if I say ain't from me, what do I get if I don't say ain't? He goes, now we're having this friggin' discussion, I swear to God. At like 11:30 a.m. or 12 p.m. on a SmackDown taping. He goes, well, that's a good point. That's a good point. We want to be fair. So, you know, if you say ain't, I get $100. I go, correct, Vince. He goes, but if you don't say ain't, which he goes, you won't do. You can't do it. I go, no, I'll do it. He goes, no, you can't do it. I go, oh, no, I'll do it. He goes, okay, if you don't say ain't, every week you don't say ain't, I will not terminate your contract. I will not fire you. So I just crack up laughing. Everybody laughs. It's just hysterical. He laughs. He goes, all right, because I think that's a fair deal. He goes, what do you guys think? He asks the room. Well, what do you think the room's going to say? Everybody's a sheep, right? Oh, yeah, Vince, you're right. Yeah, Taz won't get fired. I'm like, all right, so I'm taking, what am I going to say at that point when the guy who owns the company, who's my boss, says, if you don't say ain't, you'll get to keep your job. You know, so what am I going to say? He's basically threatening my contract. So we go through this whole thing, and I go, this went on for, dudes, I'm serious. This went on for like 20 minutes. I said, okay, so here's the deal. I'm not going to say ain't, and I guess I'm going to get to keep working here, even though I have a contract. Goes, oh, well, yeah, but, you know, we could discuss contracts day and night. We know how that is. They don't really mean anything. Everybody laughs again. I go, okay, great. That's great. Hearing that from Vince. All right. He goes, oh, I'm joking. He goes, but look. No, I just won't fire you. He goes, you don't say ain't, I won't fire you. Now, look, truth be told, if I said ain't a bunch of times, he wasn't going to fire me. It was a tongue-in-cheek comment by him, but it was just Vince being Vince, you know? So we all laughed. It was funny at the time. So at the end of this whole 20, 25-minute dialogue we had, he goes, now, JR's sitting in the adjacent aisle to where I am, at the table to my left. He goes, oh, by the way, JR, he goes, as bad as his New York slang is, your Southern drawl is just as bad. It's on you, too. You say ain't, you get fined $100. So he dragged JR into this thing, right? So JR laughs. So he's like, all right, well, I guess I keep my job if I don't say ain't, too. He goes, yep, that's it. So right, so now that's just the beginning of the story. So here we go. Now it gets to a point where I'm starting to think I'm getting madder about it as I'm sitting there. And I go, well, Vince, by the way, I'm glad we had this discussion in private. He goes, well, it was open for the room. I said, well, we said we were going to talk later. He goes, yeah, I couldn't hold it in. I go, okay. Because I was looking at you, and I knew that when I watched the show back, and I heard you say ain't, I knew that I wanted to say something to you. This is what Vince said to me. And when I saw you yesterday at Raw and then today, and I couldn't remember what it was, and then it just hit me while we were sitting there. I said, okay, that's cool, whatever. And he goes, oh, by the way, one more little caveat. I go, okay, what's that? He tells me and JR, you can't say ain't backstage either. Right? So now it's even funnier. But he's serious. He's not joking. So like, hypothetically, if I'm in catering, getting a cup of coffee, and I say, oh, man, there ain't no cream over here for this coffee. And one of the stooges runs to Vince and tells him, or Vince hears it. Oh, my God. It would have cost me $100. Every time I said ain't. So, boom, meeting ends. Now, me being psychotic and crazy and ultra insanely competitive. So now, in my whacked out brain, to me, this is a challenge. Now I am challenged. Now I will not let this friggin' guy win this challenge. To him, he just wanted to pop the room and kind of just make sure I didn't say ain't, because he really didn't like the word ain't, or JR didn't say the word ain't, right? So 1 week goes by, SmackDown, no Ain't, never said Ain't. 2 weeks, 3 weeks go by, nothing. We're in a production meeting, like third or fourth, it was a go-home for a pay-per-view. And he says, I want to just point out that I have not heard Taz. JR was not in this meeting. I have not heard Taz and JR, by the way. Neither of those fellas have said the word Ain't. So congratulations to them. But the game is still going to continue. But let's give them a round of applause. Give Taz a round of applause. They all clap for me in the room. I'm like, all right, awesome. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm working at it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right. So it was a big joke. Ha ha. And then we go into this pay-per-view the following week. I don't remember the name of the show, but I know it was in San Diego. And so Michael Cole and I, you know, at that time, if we got the opportunity as a SmackDown team to call a main event, it was a big deal, you know, back then. It was a big deal because we were splitting time with JR and King. And JR and King were known as the veteran team, so we kind of had to pay our dues. So there was this particular show, again, I don't remember who was in the main event. I know it was in San Diego. And so what happens is we called three matches on that pay-per-view, or four maybe, and we called the main event. And we knocked it out of the park. I mean, it was a great call. And I'm thinking, was it San Jose or San Diego? Huh. There's that detail problem again. But I know we called the main event and we knocked it out of the park. And it just felt like the right call. The match was awesome. The place went crazy. And we go backstage. And it was rare when you walk through the gorilla position when the show's over. The last guys to walk through there most of the time are the announcers. And Michael Cole and I were the last ones to walk through. The Raw team went first, you know, JR and King, and then the boys were there, and then everybody was shaking hands. Hey, good show, guys, the agents, the production crew. Vince was sitting behind in his spot in the grill position by himself. He makes eye contact with Michael Cole and I, and he calls us over, and he shakes our hands and hugs us both. He goes, guys, great job, because you guys really kicked ass on that call. It was a great main event. The boys busted their ass, and you guys had a great call. You told great stories. You had great energy. You guys did a great job. I'm very proud, and I'm very happy that you guys did what you did out there. That was awesome. Cole's like, thank you, Vince. Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity. Thanks, Vince. He does his routine, and he walks away. I go, Vince, I appreciate it. Thank you. It's a great job, Taz. Really, you really described a lot of stuff in there. You brought us in the ring. You did the right thing. I go, thanks. And then I start to walk away, and I turn back, and I say, you know something? I got to tell you, I got to be honest. I ended up saying Ain't during one of the matches in the show. I stooge myself off, right? To this day, I still don't know why I did this. He goes, no, I didn't hear you do that. You sure you did that? I go, yeah. He goes, no, no. I go, no, I think I did. I go, no big deal. I thought it was funny. He goes, yeah, no, that is funny. That is funny, right? So he goes, anyway, good job, good job. I go, okay, thanks. I start to walk away. It was like a ramp to go down from the gorilla position, the entrance, the holding area. And I start to walk. There's really nobody in the grill position except Jerry Briscoe and Vince McMahon. And he goes, Taz, hold up, Vince says. He goes, wait a minute. And he's on the headsets, and he's talking to Kevin Dunn in the production truck. And now he has him finding where I said Ain't. Yes. And I had to wait there for probably, I don't know, 15 minutes. Sure enough, he confirmed that I stooged myself off and I said Ain't. He takes the headset off. He goes, ah, son of a bitch, you believe this? You're right. You said Ain't. You owe me $100. And I start laughing. I go, Vince, I sat here for 15 minutes for you to confirm that. I said, I thought we just had a good show. And he goes, no, you guys had a great show. It was a great call. He goes, you owe me $100. I go, you're kidding. He goes, no, I'm not kidding. I go, come on. He goes, no, I want my $100. Tomorrow night's Raw. I'd like it by Raw. If you need an advance, I can give you the money. Ha ha, kidding, pal. He gives me that routine, right? So I said, no, I don't need the advance. I go, you're joking. You really want this $100? He goes, oh, I'm dead serious. I'm like, son of a... Now I'm hot. I go, okay, just how you made me wait here for 15 minutes so you can confirm that I said this. So do me a favor. You wait right here. He goes, are you serious? I go, I'm dead serious. You wait right here. Okay, fine, I'll wait here. I run to the locker room. I go in my bag, in my wallet, and sure enough, I had like maybe $80 cash. I borrowed $20 from one of the boys, And I did pay the guy back. Don't want to say the name. And I borrowed $20. I said, dude, let me borrow $20. He lends me $20. I run up to Vince. I go, here you go. I go, put your hand out. I give him the friggin' money. Boom, boom, boom. I go, here. You need it more than me. Now, he had an audience there because he didn't know what was going to happen. So everybody came around to see because he's like, Taz is hot. I don't know. I go, you need the friggin' $100 more than me. Take the $100. And I storm away. He starts laughing. He goes, ah, come on, what are you getting hot about? I turn around, I thought he was going to give me $100 back. He deep sixed it. He puts it in his pocket, right? So I was so mad about this, right? I was mad. I don't know what I was mad at, him actually going through with the $100 fine thing for ain't, or if I was hot at myself for stooging myself off. But the next day, we were in a meeting at Raw, and it was a big ha-ha moment. It was funny. And everybody laughed about it, and I cooled off. And Vince tells the story how hot I was, and I slammed the money in his hand and was violent and all this stuff. And but like in a funny way, he was saying it. And then we all laughed about it. He kept my 100. Moral of the story is, don't stooge yourself off. More importantly, don't say ain't.
So let me ask you a question. You think we do the show for free, right? It's just like for free because you downloaded it. Well, it's time to pay the bills. Relax.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, well, as they say, the match is over. So I want to thank, before you hang up and say goodbye to me, I want to just give, before, when I'm done my thank, because I'm going to hit you with something. I want to thank Sabu for being a guest here on the Human Podcast Machine with myself. I do appreciate him coming on. It's not often that he does interviews, so I appreciate him doing that. I really do. And it was great catching up with him and letting you guys inside on the mutual respect we have for each other. I think you could tell that, and I'm forever grateful to Sabu, as I said to him, for him helping me, just not being selfish, and when he could have, when he was getting a big push in the very beginnings of Eastern Championship Wrestling, and I was just a guy coming in to put him over, so that really helped pole vault my career, and I'm forever grateful for that. I mean, so thanks to Sabu for that and for coming on the show. I also want to say what's coming up going forward here on HPM. You know, in March of 2015, this upcoming month, you know, we got some pretty cool guests, you know, with Veda Scott from Ring of Honor. Veda is a just a very intelligent girl, tremendous in-ring character for Ring of Honor. She's also an attorney, which is interesting. So a highly intelligent young lady. And I want to talk to her about intergender wrestling. I mean, it's a very interesting topic that's kind of people talk about. I have some thoughts and opinions on that. So we'll have Veda on in a couple of weeks here on HPM. And also, good old JR, I put out a tweet recently about JR and I going to do a show together. He right here on HPM, on the Human Podcast Machine, a WrestleMania preview show, the week going into WrestleMania. So this should be pretty cool. Well, JR and my thoughts and opinions on what's rocking and rolling with you know, WrestleMania. So we're gonna lock that down. Also in March, right here on HPM, will be a Fantasy Draft Editions with myself, Mike Tenay, and Seth. We will break down the all-time top 10 fantasy draft managers edition. That will be in March, managers. So that should be a fun fantasy draft edition, top 10 managers. So that should be pretty cool. And next week, right here on HPM, kicking off March of 2015, will be the Samoan Submission Machine, Samoa Joe, who recently parted ways with TNA. So Joe will be my guest, and you all and I will get an update on Joe's deal. What's going on with Joe and his future in the wrestling business, and what's next for Joe. Hopefully we get that insight from him. So it should be pretty cool. So that's it. That's going to cover what's coming up in March, and some other stuff that I'll drop here. You know, different reacts to different shows. You guys know I like to sprinkle those in and surprise guys. One more thing. Celebrity Draft Edition. I put that out there too. Okay, that's something new I'm going to be doing. Every once in a while, I'll drop a Celebrity Draft Edition. Like my first, it'll be a pro athlete, a professional musician, or an actor, an actress, or whatever. I'm going to have a one of the greatest lacrosse players, pro lacrosse players ever. Some of you guys might never heard of this cat. His name is Paul Rabil. Paul Rabil. If you Google him, you will see. Or go on YouTube. R-A-B-I-L. Okay, Paul Rabil, multi-time All-American at Johns Hopkins University, MLL All-Star, MVP. I mean, MLL stands for Major League Lacrosse. That's the pro league. You know, he's a Red Bull-sponsored athlete, GoPro, all this other stuff. He's just a brand machine, and he's also a massive pro wrestling fan. So he has a big passion for wrestling, does Paul Rabil. So he will be my first celebrity interview. We're on a celebrity edition of HPM right here. And I'm probably dropping that in March also. So March is going to be busy right here. So tell your friends and family, subscribe right here on play.it or on iTunes to me, Taz, the human podcast machine. Next week, we got Samoa Joe. I appreciate your support, guys. Love you. Stay safe. Stay smart. Till next week, I'm Taz. You're not.